Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We're searching the galaxy for super collectors. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today on a busy edition of the show, we'll look at the backlash against two anti-piracy efforts in Congress. The band Not a Surf will join us to play live in our studio, and we'll begin by kicking off a search for super collectors. That's what we're calling people with extremely large collections of music-related material. Vinyl albums, 8-track tapes, concert t-shirts, Beatle memorabilia, you name it. If it's music-related, and you or someone you know collects a ton of it, I mean an absurd amount of it, we want to hear about it. And we want to see pictures, especially if it takes up lots of space. This is all for a series that Soundcheck will air the week of February 13th. So before then, we want you to either nominate a super collector you know, or simply nominate the super collector that you yourself are. All nominations will be featured on our website, and if your story is really unusual, we might feature your super collector on the air. The nomination forms on our website. You can share information about your super collector and upload a picture of the super collection. Just go to wnyc.org/soundcheck. Okay, copyright's been dominating the headlines this past week. We'll make heads and tails of SOPA, PIPA, Mega Upload, and more with the intellectual property expert that we call the Copycat. And coming up later, Not a Surf is set to release a brand new album tomorrow. Today, we get a live, unplugged preview from the band Not a Surf on Soundcheck. They say there are 8 million stories in the Naked City. This is one of them. Sure, it's a crime story, but this one's kind of complicated. Intellectual property. That's right, baby. Copyright. Trademarks. What happens when the public domain gets a little too public? To explain it, you need someone who knows the law. To some, he's a mild-mannered attorney. But to us, he's the Copycat. Today, the Copycat joins us to explain the ins and outs of the recent copyright stories in the news. The Copycat is, of course, John Reichman, partner at New York's Kenyon & Kenyon LLP. John, welcome back.
Thank you, John.
What do you think of your new moniker?
I love it. It's great.
Just in the interest of full disclosure, the Copycat is pro-copyright.
Thank you.
Lots of copyright in the news this past week. Let's start with the bizarro story of Mega Upload and the raid.
Yes.
This is one of the largest criminal copyright cases ever brought by the United States Justice Department, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Why Mega Upload?
Well, apparently they were uploading and making available massive amounts of copyright infringing sound recordings, music, movies, TV shows. At a very high level, apparently they made up almost 4% of total internet traffic.
Mm-hmm. They actually brag about that in their little video, their corporate video. You know, they have a song about being mega upload for free and stuff. 4% of the internet, which is, when you think of it, an astonishing amount of traffic.
Yes. I mean, it's amazing chutzpah, and they had really developed this business model that was built around copyright infringement.
Well, now, I mean, they claim, Let me not get, even get into what they claim. Let me ask you this: how is Mega Upload different from any other site where people can upload files like YouSendIt, Dropbox, or even things like Napster and BitTorrent? How is Mega Upload different?
Well, a lot of these other sites were clearly designed for more lawful purposes, and they had focused and targeted their marketing and promotion and tried to develop a client base for more legitimate businesses or personal uses of non-infringing material. Mega Upload, by contrast, was very brazen and blatant in terms of going after a market where there was a lot of infringement going on. And one thing is that the Justice Department was able to get a lot of their internal emails that showed that the employees and the officers of this company knew how it was being used and were fine with it and promoted it. So mm-hmm. It was really that kind of intent that distinguished them from a lot of these other more legitimate business-oriented locker sites.
So if you, John Reichman, are the copycat, your evil nemesis might well be the gentleman known as Kim.com. Yes, that is his legal name, who runs Mega Upload.
Yes.
Now, I mentioned that they have this kind of corporate video, music video thing. It actually, you would expect that if they were blatant about, you know, using copywritten material, putting songs and videos and movies and TV shows up for people to see for free, that it would be hard for them to get the kind of star power that you see in this video. Will.i.am from Black Eyed Peas, Kanye West, Alicia Keys, I mean, just one after another. Here's a little bit of the song called The Mega Song.
Off the internet. Get the Mega Manager, it's 10 times faster. Bit by bit, unlimited, it's a hit, it's a hit.
MEGA, upload to me today, send me a file. Mega Upload.
The Mega Song from the folks at Mega Upload, an advertisement that you heard the voice of Mr. Kim.com himself, shadowy as a guy who's 6'6" and almost 300 pounds can be, Finnish-German citizen based in New Zealand. But Macy Gray and Chris Brown and Kanye and all these other stars. And John, what they're singing about is Send Me a File, which I, perhaps naively, interpret as, give me your photos, you know, your homework, you know, put it up here. It'll always be available. You can share it with your family and your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a coded message somewhere in here? You know, it's 10 times faster. That means you can upload video files and stuff.
I think so. I think for people out there who really want to be trading in marketing and in these large volumes of infringing material, I think that type of promotion sends the message that this is a really perfect site, a really perfect vehicle to do that.
But so, how is this legally actionable? To simply say, we're fast, we're free, put your files up here. You know, I mean, presumably they're, just as with YouTube and YouSendIt and all these others, presumably they're not watching every single locker.
Correct. And per se, that type of promotion in and of itself may be legitimate, but where over time you see that what is being traded on the site are these massive amounts of infringing material, and you have a situation, a scenario, where the people who are running the company know that's going on and don't do anything to stop it or inhibit it, you know, you put two and two together and it becomes very obvious that this has become their business model. Mm-hmm. They have a business model based on infringement.
So if you tell YouTube, hey, I own the copyright to that song on that video, YouTube will take it down.
Correct.
Mega Upload was not doing that?
I believe that in a lot of cases they were not doing it, or they were ignoring it, or in situations where there was just such a huge quantity of it going on, and you had the information within the company showing that they, you know, felt that this was a great, great way to do business.
Mm-hmm.
I think it made it very easy under all of those combined circumstances for the feds to step in and take action.
And they stepped in and took action on the other side of the world.
Yes.
This is in New Zealand.
Correct.
Can they do that?
Yeah, they can do that. You know, they work in conjunction with the New Zealand government. And it's just like, you know, in China when you have U.S. law enforcement go after the people selling CDs in the flea markets, this is now sort of the high-tech, current high-tech version of that activity.
Funny thing about that mega upload song that we were hearing, when it went up on YouTube in December, it had to be taken down because Universal Music Group, which represents a lot of these big artists, complained. And then it went right back up again when mega upload turned out to have, they claimed, signed release agreements from every artist in that
right.
campaign. So
right.
I guess they did know how to cover their tracks to some extent. Is the Justice Department making an example of them? Because at 4% of internet, even if that's an exaggeration, because of their size and scope, are they being held up as an example to everyone else?
I think so. A, it's because of their size, and B, because the Justice Department found this kind of perfect paper trail, this record of the
internal emails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really made it easy for them to choose Mega Upload as this target to make an example of.
All right, we're speaking with John Reichman, partner at Kenyon & Kenyon LLP. He is the copycat, our expert on all things copyright and intellectual property related. Let's move on to SOPA and PIPA. These are two very divisive pieces of legislation that also, you know, sort of were creating headlines in the past week. First of all, what is SOPA? What is PIPA?
Well, SOPA is the Stop Online Piracy Act. It's in the House of Representatives. PIPA, the Protect Intellectual Property Act, was in the Senate. And basically, to really understand them, you have to go back about 15 years to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Back in the late 90s, Congress enacted that, and they thought that was going to be a really satisfactory way to deal with infringements on the Internet, and that you could send this notice to the Internet service provider, then they would remove the material, and then the problem would go away. Two problems that arose over the years was the sheer volume of infringing activity going on, notwithstanding the availability of the DMCA, and two, the fact that a lot of these problem websites, like Mega Upload, are offshore. They're outside of the U.S., so they're beyond the jurisdiction of this U.S. law. So the philosophy behind these two new acts, SOPA and PIPA, was basically to use U.S. tools to starve these foreign websites of revenues. In other words, being able to force the companies that process the credit card payments to stop doing that, forcing companies that put ads on these websites to stop paying them.
These are bills that were meant to benefit copyright holders, songwriters, novelists, filmmakers, TV producers, etc.
Correct. It was the copyright ownership industry that was behind. They were the proponents behind these two bills.
So why did they become so controversial?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you have historically, like the movie lobby and the record industry lobby, they were like among the biggest and most powerful lobbies in the world. But now all of a sudden over the years you have these equally powerful, forceful lobbies like Google.
And Wikipedia.
And Wikipedia and Facebook. And not only that, but they have the tools to mobilize, you know, millions and millions of people out there. It's sort of the same tools that benefited Barack Obama a few years ago and that were benefiting, you know, the Arab Spring, are now being mobilized for the purpose of fighting legislation that otherwise has a lot of support in Congress.
Mm-hmm. So Wikipedia famously shutting itself down for a day last week to protest SOPA and PIPA. But it wasn't just online. I mean, I mentioned before, this was meant to benefit, for example, musicians. But a lot of musicians are on the other side. Listen to this. This is Leah Kaufman, a singer-songwriter behind viral hits like Obama Girl. She wrote a song of protest about SOPA and PIPA called Firewall.
I hope that we will never
Singer-songwriter Leah Kaufman with Firewall, a song that she wrote to protest the planned congressional legislation, SOPA and PIPA, which have both been put on hold. They haven't been shelved. They're on hold in Congress for the moment. We're speaking with John Reichman, partner at Kenyon & Kenyon LLP. He's our copycat on Soundcheck. A2IM, the American Association of Independent Music, came out in support of the bill's intentions to protect singers and songwriters, music composers, anyone who owns copyright. But in an open letter against the bills written to Congress, some musicians like Trent Reznor, the band OK Go, and Daniel Lorca, who's the bassist in the band Not a Surf, all came out against the bills. Now, Daniel and the band are here to play live for us in a few minutes. But Daniel, let me ask you now, why did you sign this letter?
Well, it doesn't really address the root of the problem. I think its proponents are really basically the what I call the internet deniers. I mean, I've had to deal with the music industry quite a bit, and actually before I had to go on tour with my band, I was actually a programmer, and they would deny everything from the beginning that you'll never be able to download songs, it'll never happen, there won't be enough bandwidth. Blah, blah, blah. So I think it's very clear in what's happened since those days that if you offer consumers a viable way that's convenient of paying for their content, they're more than willing to do so.
Well, now let me ask both of you guys this question. There are things like Spotify now, which, big in Europe, came to the United States last year. The industry is clearly now, finally, working hard to make it easy for you to buy music easily and cheaply, and making it harder and harder for you to steal music. Is that a good thing? Is that the way
to go?
Well,
it is, because, it's a pain to have to steal the music, and I don't think anybody feels right about it. It's just that if it's so difficult to do it, and it's not convenient, then, you will go ahead and get it for free. But you may also support the band in different ways. I mean, you can go see a band, and then you could just make an extra effort and buy a couple of T-shirts from them just because you've been listening to their album, or buy a couple extra copies of the album, or find a way to support them. I mean, if you put those that in place for a fan to support the artist that they like, of course they will. Why wouldn't they?
John, what do you think? I mean, is the industry finally getting this right?
Well, I don't, on the one hand, yes. On the other hand, even though you have Spotify and other lawful means of buying music, they still say like 95% of all music traded on the internet is illegally done. And I agree that these 360 deals, which focus more on the live performances and the ancillary merchandising, are a good way to go. But I still think the whole industry is grappling for a new model that's going to really work for everybody all the way around.
Let me read a little bit, Daniel, from this open letter that you and Trent Reznor and the band OK Go and a whole bunch of others signed. We fear that the broad new enforcement powers provided under SOPA and PIPA could be easily abused against legitimate services like those upon which we depend. These bills would allow entire websites to be blocked without due process, causing collateral damage to the legitimate users of the same services, artists and creators like us, who would be censored as a result. It sounds like you're saying that these bills presume guilt until you can prove innocence.
Well, they sort of do. I mean, in the same way that you just can't treat fans as criminals and just as thieves from the get-go. The way they're proposing to help, I mean, we all want to fight piracy, absolutely.
So you're not against the idea behind the intention behind the bill.
No, but it's absolutely just the wrong way to go about it. I mean, anybody that knows anything about the internet from the technical side will tell you that won't work, and most of the artists will also agree that it's not really going to work. I mean, I have firsthand experience. You know, we had a big problem with one of the companies that are behind this. And
we, Lotta Surf.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, we spent 2.5 years waiting to get the rights back to our second album. And we had them because of the – but they have the lawyers and they have the time to just sort of keep you in limbo. Mm-hmm. And just forcing these websites to police everybody around is just never going to work.
John, I mean, here in the United States, the burden of proof has always been upon the prosecution, you know, to prove guilt beyond reasonable doubt.
Right.
Is that – I mean, is that getting – where's the burden of proof in cases like Mega Upload?
Well, I think, you know, still you have this basic burden. I think that's ultimately going to stay the same. But I think, you know, it's very easy to prove copyright infringement because, you know, it really turns on, you know, whether there is authorization or not. So I think, you know, the problem is because ultimately even with that burden, it's easy to meet it. You have a lot of companies and websites getting caught in the crosshairs. The issue is which side are you on? I find it fascinating when I hear, musicians who own copyright content being against these bills, which, you know, in a lot of respects are intended to protect their copyright ownership interests.
But as Daniel just said, I mean, he's not against the idea of protecting his copyright, but he feels it's not the right way to do it.
I know, but, you know, with all due respect, everybody says that they're in favor of copyright protection, but they say this goes too far. I mean, you know, that's a given. The hard part is where do you strike the balance? Mm. And I think SOPA and PIPA, you know, represent one good faith effort to strike that balance. Now, I think in some respects they do go far. You know, the one problem is that a website that just has a little bit of copyright infringement material can get completely taken down, even if 85% of what's on that website is legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
So there does need to be some fine tuning. But, you know, I think just expressing, you know, an affirmance of the desire to protect copyrighted work is not enough. You have to accept that it's going to be very hard to strike this balance.
All right. Peter Gabriel also voiced his opposition to the PIPA and SOPA legislation. He also blacked out his website last Wednesday, same day as Wikipedia and some of the others, in protest against this congressional legislation, which has now been put on hold. Peter Gabriel from the new version of his song Red Rain from the album New Blood. He also opposed the PIPA and SOPA legislation before the U.S. Congress. We're speaking with John Reichman. You'll hear more from Daniel Lorca in a few minutes when he and the rest of the band Nada Surf play music for us live in our studio. John, the copycat. One more quick copyright story in the news this past week. The Supreme Court saying that works of art that were in the public domain in the United States, not protected by copyright, could be brought back in to copyright. It's kind of a weird case. It's sort of nerdy, but potentially an important one.
Yes, it's nerdy, which is why I particularly found it interesting. And that is because the U.S. Had to, when it joined the International Copyright Protection Convention, known as the Berne Convention, had to reject formalities. A lot of foreign copyright works had lost their copyright protection in the U.S. because they had failed to renew their registrations, really technical requirements. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Congress felt and actually had to say that that would be wiped away and these foreign works could get their copyright restored. Well, there are a lot of businesses out there that make a living from selling public domain works, old books, old symphonies. So they challenged this new law on constitutional grounds, and the Supreme Court held last week that this law was constitutional, that public domain status is not a one-way street, that something could be recaptured and brought back into the copyright fold.
So if you enjoy Peter and the Wolf by Prokofiev or The Soldier's Tale by Stravinsky, and over the years these have been part and parcel of concerts all over the place, and no one had to pay copyright. Now you have to pay copyright on
exactly.
them. Exactly. The Cleveland Orchestra, conducted by Igor Stravinsky, who would actually have celebrated, I think, this Supreme Court ruling. Here's a little bit of The Soldier's Tale. John Reichman is the copycat. When he still is partner at Kenyon and Kenyon LLP. It's been a very busy week, John. Thanks for bringing us up to speed.
Thank you, John.
And still to come, Nada Surf is releasing a brand new album tomorrow. The band joins us today for a live performance on Soundcheck.